our favorite interludes 1 and 2 come back, and they have a very sensual description of the relationship between the saucer and the cup and all of the hot, steamy foam that must be going on in that partnership.
Welcome back to No Script, an unscripted conversation about theater's best scripts. I'm Jackson, that's Jacob, and we are here on the second episode of Themed Month, which is one of the hallmarks of our season, talking about short 10-minute plays this themed month.
That's right, we're back for the third time to short plays as our themed month plan structure. I'm trying to find a way to say our themed month theme. Without using the word theme a second time. But
motif.
Motif, I like. Yeah, that's a good one. We're doing mini month this time around, which is not just short plays, but 10-minute plays. 10-minute plays are, of course, plays that take about 10 minutes to produce. They tend to be fairly straightforward in terms of completing one sort of action from beginning to end, one sort of question. But in their sort of simplicity and brevity, there is room for great risk and experimentation, and thus we come to a play by Tasha Gordon Solomon, who is not a playwright we've talked about on the podcast before. We're not going to do a context section, but we will try to find a different play of Tasha's to do later to do a full context on her. Her play, Coffee Break, was produced by the Cumana Festival at one point in time and is delightful. It's like heartwarming, I think. And strange and leaves maybe more questions than it does answers, but I've worked on it a couple of times in different contexts, and I just find it a great experiment as to what is happening and why, and in the middle of it is a love story.
This play was a delight to read. I haven't had the chance to work on it, so I'm excited to hear your thoughts around having worked on it. Because, there's some great challenges in this play, some great, definitely great characters, great lines. I'm excited to have the chance to chat about it, because it is like one of those so rarely, I don't think we talked about this last episode at all, but like one of my favorite types of theater that I've been a part of is a 24-hour theater festival, which is all about like writing short plays and taking risks. And this play does that. It's a short little power-packed play with some big risks in it that make for really delightful, fun ways that your brain gets to work as you engage a piece of theater. So I'm excited to get to chat about it.
That's right. Before we dive into the conversation, we'd just like to ask that you think about heading on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/noscriptpodcast, all one word, no hyphens, no underscores. Over there, you can become a supporter of the show. For as low as $1 a month, you can support the running of No Script, which, just to be frank, would not happen without the folks over on Patreon who support us, make this possible for us to do. We love doing this. We love to do things like Themed Month, but it's not free. And we're just not rich enough to do something that costs money like this does and time like this does for free. And that's, that is just our situation. And so the folks on Patreon make this show possible with their financial support of the show. There's, of course, different tiers, different reward levels, but everybody who becomes a patron, even at the $1 a month level, gets to know far in advance what is going on in the show. So if that's something that sounds like something you'd like, or you just want to be a supporter, you like what we do and you say, I want to be one of the people that makes the show possible, head on over there, patreon.com/noscriptpodcast. Again, no hyphens, no underscores, one word, and we'll see you over there.
Yes, thank you all very much to our patrons. Y'all rock. We'll see you at patreon.com/noscriptpodcast.
And now back to the script.
Here we go.
All right. So Coffee Break is one of those 10-minute plays that has multiple scenes. in the vast, like, if you looked at a lot of 10-minute plays, I think you would see that most of them are one scene, one action. But not all of them by any stretch, and they have a huge variety. I mean, 10-minute plays are many times very experimental, and even in terms of the non-straightforward one-scene psychological realism genre, this is not on the, like, far experimental end, I would say. But it's just enough to make you interested, to raise some questions and some theatrical possibilities in your head. This is a story about two co-workers. They go by just Woman 1 and Woman 2. And the setting is a coffee shop. It is a coffee shop where apparently they meet and spend time together with some regularity. There are four scenes of this play. Each scene is some period of days apart as they come back to their regular meeting. What happens in the first scene is that we learn that the business that these two women work for is in the middle of a restructuring, and it may, in fact, require some layoffs, but no one knows for sure, because very early on, Woman 1 says, wait a minute, there's a heart in my cappuccino. She says that in the foam, the barista has made a heart, and that, of course, must mean that he is hitting on her, that he's in love with her, that he wants her desperately. Her co-worker, Woman 2, says, of course, that doesn't seem like that is necessarily what that means. It's probably just a design in the coffee cup. But Woman 1 is fairly convinced that this is a declaration of love or interest or whatever. And that ends that first scene, but not quite. Because we get this interlude, this poetic interlude, this metaphoric interlude, this something that I'm not sure of, to be honest with you. And this is with, I guess, characters that we just call 1 and 2. So not Woman 1 and Woman 2, just 1 and 2. No indication of gender or personality or look or anything like that, just 1 and 2. And they describe the thoughts of the table and chair of this coffee shop. And the thoughts, in a sort of poetic, metaphoric language, they say that the chair must be in love with the table, and the table sort of thinks, you know, this is just a chair. And it ends with the chair saying, this chair thinks, I think this is love. And we go to the next scene. And in the next scene, apparently, the woman, too, is a little bit strange. She then finds it a little strange that her partner, her co-worker, Woman 1, is just sort of not paying attention, is just looking at this barista, and apparently has not been willing yet to look into her cappuccino and see what's in the foam. She's too nervous. She's hoping that it's another declaration of love. Woman 2 looks and says, I don't really see anything. Woman 1 says, oh, I actually think it is a drawing of female genitalia, and that it is a really bold declaration of lust and love, and oh my gosh, it's got me all aflutter. This is not me, but Woman 1. And so this is like, oh my gosh, what is happening? And she discovers that on her saucer that her cappuccino cup is on, there's also a scone. A scone that she says he must have snuck on there that she didn't pay for. And so he drew this very provocative image in her cappuccino and gave her a scone. And she ends her part of the scene by saying, this is getting so intense. Our favorite interludes 1 and 2 come back, and they have a very sensual description of the relationship between the saucer and the cup and all of the hot, steamy foam that must be going on in that partnership. We move ahead to what I would call scene 3, although there's no real indication of scene numbers or anything like that. And Woman 2 says, something's wrong with you. And Woman 1 says, well, it's not me. Something's wrong with the barista. Apparently, they skipped their last regular meeting. And Woman 2 says, well, you ditched me. And Woman 1 says, well, I'm so sorry I ditched you. Things were just getting too intense with the barista, and I had to take a break. But now I've come back, and he doesn't seem interested in me at all. He asked me if I wanted my cappuccino iced, which of course means that he couldn't draw anything in the foam. And she does check then her hot cappuccino. Apparently, she didn't get it iced, and in fact, there is nothing in the foam, which to her means, oh no, the relationship is over. I've been dumped in this sort of look across the room at each other sort of relationship. Our interludes come back, 1 and 2. They describe the napkins and the napkins getting peeled away from each other one by one they say layer upon layer upon layer upon and upon and upon endless infinite aloneness. In our last scene, we come back. It's been several weeks. Woman 2 says how glad she is to see Woman 1. Woman 1 says, I've been avoiding the coffee shop. I'm so sorry. And then Woman 2 reveals, because the relationship is over with the barista, basically, and that Woman 1 says, look, he's drew me a smiley face. That means that we have some closure. Our relationship, this barista wild thing is over, but it seems fine. And Woman 2 reveals, oh, by the way, in these intervening weeks, I've been laid off. I just wanted to say hi one more time. And they do agree, although maybe the implication is that this is a sort of empty agreement, that of course they're going to keep hanging out at a different coffee shop, even though Woman 2 has been laid off from the office. And then we get the real sort of twist kicker at the end. Only one of our interludes come back. Two, the stand-in, I guess, for Woman 2. And instead of describing an object in the coffee shop, she describes the coworker. The coworker who is Woman 2, thinking of her coworker. And we learn that she has been in love with Woman 1 all along. That, in fact, she bought the free scone from several scenes ago. She says, I wonder, the interlude 2 says, I wonder what she thinks, this colleague, this acquaintance, this friend. I wonder if she'll ever think of me the way I ever think, the way so many things think, but are rarely thought of. And thus ends our little unrequited love story, Coffee Break.
Now, let me tell you, I am a full-time manager. I'm a full-time manager of a cafe. I do a lot of latte art. Uh-huh. If you read too much into the latte art that anyone gives you, it's a bad idea.
Well, and so this is, I think, maybe one of the questions of the play, actually genuinely, is to what degree you think Woman 1 is imagining this. And maybe it's a question that doesn't matter ultimately, because the relationship is not really about her relationship with the barista. The story of the play is the relationship between these coworkers. But nonetheless, it's a question that you ask. So whether it's a question that matters to the overall story, I mean, we don't ever meet the barista. It is a question that is sort of the question of trying to get a grip on the tone of the play and the nature of the, I mean, what kind of person sees the heart in the latte art and is like, this person is in love with me.
Right. Someone new to coffee shops, but,
what I'm saying is like, is there more going on? Like,
right.
Has the barista winked at her? Is he chatted her up when she checks out? Or is it truly that what we're presented with within the coffee break is the end all be all of this barista relationship and she's just like hallucinating?
Right. Yeah. Well, the question of all of these other like interludes, I feel like plays into that question of what is real, what isn't, and what is who experiencing when? Are just we the audience experiencing these interludes, or are they like little scenes that play on loop in one of the characters' minds? Because then it is the sort of question of like, okay, well, what else is Woman 1 experiencing in the world around her that is or isn't necessarily felt by others around them as well? So, but then the sort of tricky thing with that is the view into Woman 2's mind in the last interlude. So in that one, you kind of like step into her mind, and we're not focused as much on Woman 1, because Woman 1 has a very very disconnected final line in relationship to that interlude. Not like she listened in at all to it, so it doesn't seem like she's imagining Woman 2's interior monologue, but rather we get a glimpse into Woman 2's interior monologue.
I will agree that the last interlude, to me, and I'm not really speaking for Tasha Gordon Solomon, I don't know that this is what she wrote, this is just my reading of it. That ending where 2 is, to the interlude 2, not Woman 2, has this whole poetic monologue about the coworker, and then Woman 1 says, hey, it's going to get cold. Talking to Woman 2, which is the first time, first of all, we've ever come back after an interlude across the whole play to the same scene. But the implication is like you're spacing off. you're like, you're thinking of something else. Your brain is elsewhere and you're not paying attention to your drink, which is going to get cold. To me, that does indicate that these interludes are experienced somehow by woman too.
Yeah, I agree. This kind of like, well, and especially because it seems like woman one is sort of disconnected from the friendship throughout. and a lot of it is by virtue of this question mark relationship that's going on. But yeah, you have this like, to me, a lot of these scenes feel like the imagining that happens when you're partway through a conversation or by yourself in a coffee shop or whatever. It is this sort of like imagining of like, man, what if that napkin could talk? Wonder what it feels like about the other napkins. So it is this sort of like fresh, interesting, imaginative space. And at least, I tend to agree with you. It feels like a lot of Woman 2's imaginings.
No, I agree. And if you read the first three interludes separate from the play, so you have this interlude about the table and the chair, and it's about like an unrequited love, right? The chair is in love with the table. We're so perfect together. The table is like, these are just the chairs that I was factory produced with. I don't have any special feeling about them. So unrequited love. Then you have this like passionate, steamy, sexy exchange between the saucer and the cup. And it's like, oh, now this relationship is getting intense and passionate and oh my goodness, blah, blah, blah. And then you have like the breakup one, right? The napkins pulled apart every day, infinite aloneness or however the poem ends. Then that is like, if you just read those interludes, you get a little like mini relationship arc, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I see you across the room. I think of you in a way you don't think of me. And then it changes, and now we're both passionate about each other, and look at all this incredible steamy romance, and then the breakup. It's a very little mini arc, but you could sort of read those as a sort of poetic investigation through objects of a brief relationship, a fling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a short little vignettes of a relationship. All kind of juxtaposed with this sort of relationship between coworkers and the missed connections too. Interestingly, the kind of repeating theme of missed connections, though the second one, you don't get a lot of missed connections. The saucer and the cup or the scone are like very connected to each other. But the first and the last one of those two, there is this like sort of sadness in there too of someone not connecting. And throughout all the scenes between the two women too, there's a lot of not connecting going on. And so in that way, it kind of plays out across all the scenes. This repeating theme of, oh, trying to connect, but missing each other a little bit.
And especially, woman one seems to have a pretty different view of this friendship than woman two has. And what I like about this play, one of the many things, is that you sort of understand at the end of the play that there's been two levels to that all along. Because I think throughout the play, it is pretty clear that woman two is more interested in this being a regular close friendship. We meet all the time. If you're not going to be there, I wish you'd tell me. You don't just like ditch me if we have a time set up to meet and hang out. You know, we're going to be there for each other. And woman one is more flaky. She's sort of shocked that woman two felt ditched when she didn't show up from coffee. She doesn't even know that woman two's been laid off for weeks and doesn't seem maybe right as committed to this continuing to hang out thing. And so throughout the play, you say, well, okay, this is about friends to some degree who want different things from this friendship. And we've all been there. Like, you've been on one side or the other. Somebody wants to be better friends with you than you really want to be with them. And right. Or the other way around. You're like, I really enjoy you. I wish we would be more regular in hanging out and have a closer relationship. And that's not what this friend wants. So that is like an understandable investigation. And then the end, of course, adds this other layer. While woman, that has been going on, there's also been this unrequited romance, love, deeper, more intimate, romantic type of desire from woman two that is, of course, not just missed by woman one, but like totally over her head, it seems.
Right. Yeah. Not picked up on at all. So yeah, it is. It like the depth of emotion in this play is really interesting. There's also the like I'm so interested. I didn't know that you had done this play, Jacob. I'm so interested to kind of know some of the choices that are in this play and how they play out, because the choice of these inanimate objects coming to life offers a lot of different fun options for actors, whether you embody the props themselves or the objects themselves, or, you know, if voices emerge, or how it all happens. Like, there's so many fun acting choices and challenges in this play by, like, jumping into the inner monologue of a napkin or the inner monologue of a table and chair set to try to get to kind of play with and navigate as a crew and as an acting team.
Well, and that is what's so fun about Coffee Break. There is so little prescribed for these interludes. It's just numbers, and there's no indication of staging. There are no stage directions.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing. It's just one and two are suddenly there. There's not even like one and two enter, one and two exit. Have they been there all along? What are they? Are they speaking voiceovers? Are they physicalized? Are they touching things? Are they representing things? Are they speaking about something or as something? Totally no indication whatsoever. And so if you're a director or you're an actor, that's when you start to get buzzing, right? You're like, oh, yeah. Boy. There, because we don't have any required indication by the playwright, now we get to really play and explore and try not just variations on what was expected of us, but wild variations on how the story is told and what is going on. And I've tried several things. I've worked on this in different classes with young actors in various techniques. We've tried it with music. We've tried it with the interlude speaking directly to woman two, who can experience them. We've tried them speaking to the audience with, physicalizing, holding the objects that they're discussing. I mean, there's just huge, a wild swing in what this play can be because of what I think is a very generous decision by Tasha Gordon-Solomon not to prescribe what is going on in these interludes.
Yeah, leaving it open, open-ended, open, without explanation, without overly bearing explanation, allows for play to happen, allows for imagination to happen, allows for investigation to happen. All of this fun stuff emerges as a result of withholding information. Makes me think of our conversation last week around cover as well. Is like, a lot of the one-act play is the withhold of information in order to create this intrigue in a very short amount of time, prompt bold decisions, prompt kind of big, different, expansive ways to engage with character and with drama or comedy. So the way that this play does that certainly like leaves it open both to the actors and also to the ones receiving it to be like, what is going on here with these interludes and with these characters, and how do they connect to something true and real for us?
I think that's a really interesting observation, that because the time you have in a 10-minute play is so limited, part of crafting one is figuring out what is the information that you actually need. And what should you leave out because the audience doesn't need it, but also to create interest and suspense. And it is a kind of common feature of 10-minute plays, although this is an example of a stronger version of this. What I'm about to say does not apply to this play. Oftentimes, you see this in weaker 10-minute plays, that there's a twist at the end that totally misaligns everything you thought about the 10-minute play. This is an example of where I think that really works. But I think the idea behind it is that 10-minute plays are so short that the audience can hold a lot of what they've experienced in their mind at the same time. And so when you offer a twist at the end, you as the audience can go back and think through the implications of that for the whole 10-minute play because there's just not that much of it. But usually that is, to me, a demonstration of a playwright who was not able to set the pieces up in the way that they wanted to. But in this play, I think the twist works so effectively because Tasha Gordon-Solomon set up the pieces exactly like she wanted to. We are led to believe one thing about these co-workers and their relationship, not by the playwright, right? We're not led by the playwright to something that's wrong. We're led by the character. We're led to believe they're just friends because that's what Woman 2 wants us to believe. That's how a twist is the most effective to me, especially in a 10-minute play format. When it comes out of the character's desire, not out of the playwright trying to pull the wool over your eyes. Woman 2 is presenting that she is just Woman 1's friend and coworker. And so we go along with her until we realize that that has not been, or that is, while that is true, there is also more.
Well, and also I completely agree. The sort of basing it in character and character development. The other like almost tragic, like sad thing is that we find out that there is something more. Right after it's discovered that their friendship is probably dissolving. Like, they say that it's not going to, but it's clear that they're moving to separate places, that it's going to be harder for them to meet over coffee. So it's only once we kind of, like, assume, even though they're saying something else, we're all like, yeah, these two are probably not going to keep meeting. Like, it seems rough. Like, it's hard to... Woman one is having trouble connecting and staying focused on their relationship. They're probably not going to keep meeting. And that's when we find out, oh, there's so much more for Woman two.
Well, and even more. It's like there's a very specific line because they've gone back and forth like, where do you live? Or where do you live? Maybe we can find a place to meet in the middle. And Woman One says, we're more than coworkers. But what she means is friends. And actually, if the play had been what we think it is all along, that would have been a suitable resolution for Woman Two. If it's just about she wants to be more than coworkers, meaning friends outside of work. And what we learn in one of those great writer ways is that Woman 2 gets what we think she wanted. I want to be friends outside of work, but that's not actually what she wanted all along. That she wanted more than that. That this friendship is a romance, and so what could be a positive resolution becomes not. It's not sad per se, because her love for Woman One is so pure, especially because of all the wild decisions the audience has seen Woman One make. The fact that Woman Two still thinks of her in this delightful, beautiful, you know, romantic, loving light is sweet in and of itself. It really is.
Yeah, this play really runs the gambit between like emotions of comedy, of intrigue, of love, of sweetness, of sadness, of a little bit of tragedy every now and again with the odd napkin losing contact with its neighbors. There's so many great little moments in it and great challenges for actors and teams to have the chance to try to produce. I'm glad we got to turn to it on this show and in this themed month. We'd love to kind of broaden out the conversation about this play to all of you out there in podcast land. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or X at the username at NoScriptPodcast. We also have a Gmail, NoScriptPodcast@gmail.com. Find us on any of those sites. You can chat about this play with us, chat about your latte art experiences with us, any of the plays during themed month. We'd love to keep talking about all these plays with you.
Absolutely. If you liked this conversation or any of the other conversations in our theme month, in our season, across the show, please recommend us to your family or friends. Anybody you know that likes these kinds of conversations, they will like this show. Send them our way. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, wherever your podcasts are found. You can also like us on Facebook. Link to the new episode appears every Monday when we publish. Until then, I'm Jacob. That's Jackson. We'll see you next week for another 10-minute play.